Okay, imagine this for a second. You're deep into troubleshooting some minor system glitch, or maybe you're just trying to get a new app installed. A really professional-looking website pops up. It gives you this one simple technical instruction. It says, for an immediate fix, just copy this line of code and paste it into your command line, your terminal or PowerShell.
And in that moment, what do you do? I mean, do you actually stop and think about what that code does? Or do you just follow the instructions because the site looks official and you just want to get it done?
Exactly. That little flash of impatience, that tiny moment of misplaced trust, that is the exact vulnerability that researchers are now calling click fix.
That's right. It's a highly sophisticated social engineering tactic, first flagged back in June of 2025. And it's terrifyingly effective. Because it completely bypasses nearly every traditional security measure on both Windows and macOS by turning you, the user, into the one who executes the malware.
So for our deep dive today, we're going to unpack the source material that defines ClickFix. We really need to get into how this attack manipulates trust, why it's so invisible to our standard security tools, and most importantly, what you can actually do to avoid falling for it.
Well, what's so fascinating here is that ClickFix isn't really about brilliant code that breaks systems. It's entirely about psychological brilliance.
Deceiving people.
Exactly. It capitalizes on our tendency to just blindly follow technical instructions, especially when they're disguised as some kind of system error or a mandatory security check.
All right, so let's start with the core technical trick then, because that's where the real evasion comes into play. You mentioned they get users to run commands manually. What's the actual mechanism here?
The mechanism is it's frighteningly simple, but on a technical level, it's all designed to just fly under the radar. Attackers get users to execute malicious commands directly through the operating system's own command line, so terminal on a Mac or PowerShell on Windows. And the commands themselves, they're disguised as like legitimate troubleshooting steps or verification prompts.
But the real genius is what happens after you hit enter, right? It's not like a normal download.
Correct. The key technical differentiator here is something called fileless execution. When this malware runs, it executes directly in the computer's memory. It never actually creates a physical file on the disk.
And that's the whole game.
That's the whole game. Traditional antivirus and security tools, they're designed to watch for file downloads, for executables. If there's no file, there's no signature to flag. It makes the malware virtually invisible.
So if it's running in memory and the whole attack starts inside a web browser, which is already its own sandboxed environment, it just slips past almost every initial check.
It exploits that exact blind spot. And the attackers, they set the stage perfectly. They create these incredibly detailed landing pages that mimic trusted services or official security prompts.
Like they'll copy the design of a big tech company.
Perfectly. The design, the logos, the font, everything. It's all designed to encourage your immediate trust and just lower your defenses. They make you believe you're just applying a standard patch or fixing some common glitch.
So we know how they do it invisibly, but do they use the same trick on Windows and Apple systems? The sources suggest the attack paths are pretty distinct.
Oh, they absolutely are. They're tailored to the user base of each platform. We start with the Windows vector, which seems to target a very specific type of user.
Which is?
People looking for something for free. Windows users usually run into this threat when they're searching for things like cracked software or free versions of paid applications.
And the hosting strategy they use is incredibly clever. It leans right into that assumed credibility. Our source material pointed out that attackers are using platforms like Google Colab, Google Drive, Google Sites, even Mega.
And that's the entire defense evasion strategy right there. By using legitimate, trusted cloud services that can't just be blocked by security filters, they make sure their malicious links look credible in search results.
The infection chain is also purposefully convoluted.
Very. Victims are redirected through multiple sites, which obscures the origin, before they finally land on, say, a Megafile hosting page. That page has what looks like the software they want, but it's tucked inside a password-protected ZIP archive.
Okay, hold on. Why the password on the ZIP? Is that just to make it seem more legit?
That's part of it, but it's also another layer of security bypass.
Ah,
Think about it, right?
okay.
Security systems can't scan the contents of a password-protected archive, not until you, the user, manually unpack it. Inside is the ACR Stealer malware, deceptively named setup.exe.
And ACR is aggressive.
Highly. It starts harvesting credentials, browser data, saved passwords, pretty much immediately.
And ACR isn't the final threat, is it? You mentioned it functions as a malware loader. For anyone less familiar with that term, what does a loader actually do?
A loader is basically a secondary installer. Its job is to make sure the first piece of malware, ACR in this case, sets up a persistent foothold. Then it goes out and downloads and executes a second, usually much more dangerous, payload.
And in this campaign, that payload is the particularly nasty Shark Clipper.
Yes.
Shark Clipper. The name alone sounds bad. What does it do?
It's just devastating for anyone who deals with cryptocurrency. Shark Clipper is a clipboard hijacker. It silently monitors the victim's clipboard, just waiting for something that looks like a crypto wallet address.
So when you're about to make a transaction.
Exactly. When you copy a legitimate address, say you're about to send some Bitcoin to a friend, Shark Clipper instantly and silently replaces that address in your clipboard with one controlled by the attacker.
Wait a second. So you paste the address, you maybe glance at it, see the first few characters look right, and then you send your money straight to the criminals.
That is
fundamentally manipulative. You think you've verified it.
They're banking on the fact that nobody expects their clipboard contents to change between copy and paste.
Mm.
Shark Clipper just completely shatters that trust.
Okay, now let's flip over to macOS, because the click fix approach there is different. It's more direct, and it exploits a whole different kind of web interaction, the security check.
That's where the Cloudflare impersonation comes into play.
Yeah.
macOS users often get redirected to these pages that show a really convincing but fake Cloudflare security prompt.
And people see those all the time.
All the time. And since they usually pop up when a site is supposedly under a DDoS attack, they instantly convey this sense of authority and urgency.
And the deception, it tells the user to copy and paste a verification string directly into the terminal. But if I'm reading the source material right, that string isn't just a line of text, is it?
Oh, it's definitely not simple text, no. When the user copies what they think is just some verification code, what they're actually copying is a base64 encoded shell command.
Okay, so why the base64 encoding? What does that do for the attackers?
It's pure obfuscation. I mean, if you pasted a command that clearly said download malware now.ish, you might pause, right?
You'd hope so.
But base64 turns that command into a long, garbled string of letters and numbers. It completely hides the malicious intent. Once you execute it, that command silently downloads the macOS-specific payload, the Odyssey Info Stealer.
Odyssey Info Stealer. Since macOS is built so differently from Windows, what kind of data is it specifically designed to steal from Apple systems?
It's highly targeted, and it's comprehensive. It extracts passwords from system keychains. It pulls browser cookies to the system clipboard. But what really stood out in the reports was its explicit targeting of content from Apple Notes.
Wait, Apple Notes, that's a gold mine. People store crucial non-password data in there. Everything from tax info to recovery codes, all under the assumption that it's safe inside the Apple ecosystem.
Exactly. Odyssey goes right for those specific data stores,
mm-hmm.
effectively bypassing that perceived security of macOS. And the final act is just silent data exfiltration. Odyssey compresses all the stolen info into an archive, usually called out .zip, and sends it off to its command and control servers without a single notification. You have no idea it's happened until it is far, far too late.
This whole attack just highlights how our technical defenses are being completely outpaced by social engineering. It reveals these massive systemic challenges for security teams.
It's the painful reality. I mean, let's just look at why traditional tools fail here. First, your network security, things like email gateways or web filters, they're useless. The attack doesn't start with an email or a known bad site. It starts with a simple web search and uses trusted platforms like Google services.
And then, even when the malware actually executes, the really sophisticated tools that are supposed to watch for suspicious behavior, they still struggle. I'm thinking about EDR systems, endpoint detection and response. Why can't EDR catch something like this?
It goes back to that fileless execution, running through legitimate system processes. An EDR system watches activity. So when malicious code runs via PowerShell on Windows or the Bash shell on a Mac, the activity itself looks exactly like a normal administrative task.
The system thinks it's a valid command.
Right. The system is executing a legitimate process. It just happens to be executing a malicious command that the user gave it. It's almost impossible to tell if it's a sysadmin doing their job or an unwitting victim.
And the other huge hurdle we touched on is what you could call the trusted platform problem. The attackers use Google services, they use Mega. Security teams simply cannot block those platforms across the board without causing chaos for legitimate business.
They absolutely can't. And this creates an environment where the bad guys can just keep rotating their hosting and stay one step ahead of any block lists. It shifts almost the entire burden onto the end user.
So, with this pretty bleak landscape, What does this all mean for the person at home just trying to stay safe? How do you actually spot this specific kind of attack before you paste that command? We need to get into the specific actionable knowledge.
There are definitely clear warning signs. The absolute number one rule is this. You should have immediate suspicion of any website that asks you to copy and paste commands into your system terminal, period.
Especially an encoded string you can't read.
Especially then, yes. That seems like common sense, but the sources show that when you're hyper-focused on fixing a problem, that critical thinking step can just vanish.
It's easy to get tunnel vision.
It is, but we have to internalize this. Legitimate software installations or website verifications never require you to manually paste terminal commands. A major company will build an installer or a package manager to handle that stuff safely behind the scenes.
Okay, what about those fake security prompts? The Cloudflare ones looked really convincing.
You have to look for small design flaws or weird language. But honestly, more importantly, just recognize the pattern. A real Cloudflare security check will never ever ask for a terminal command. The moment you see that request, whether it looks perfect or not, you know it's fake. Close the browser.
And the red flags for the Windows vector. With the downloads.
The combination of a password-protected archive downloaded from a third-party site like Mega, especially when combined with a request for terminal commands or a simple setup.exe inside, that is a massive indicator of malicious intent.
It's just not how real software is distributed.
Not at all. Authentic distributors use their official websites and standard signed installer packages.
We also really need to stress that users searching for cracked or pirated software are at the highest risk here.
They are, absolutely. Cybercriminals strategically target those search terms. They know that anyone looking for illegal software has already accepted some level of risk and is far more likely to just blow past these security red flags.
And the cost of a compromise is so much higher.
Astronomically higher than just buying the legitimate software license.
And finally, let's just kill the myth that macOS users are somehow immune to all this.
Yes, that is a myth that ClickFix completely dispels. The fact that the Odyssey Stealer is built from the ground up to target macOS data stores like Keychain and Apple Notes confirms it. Attackers are successfully and aggressively targeting Apple systems. Both Windows and macOS users need to be equally vigilant.
So to bring this all together, ClickFix succeeds not by breaking complex security, but by convincing the user to break it themselves. It targets the human element. The core defense, then, has to be cross-platform vigilance against social engineering, not just relying on our tech tools.
And that leads to the biggest and maybe the most difficult question that the source material raises. It pointed out that platform providers like Google are in a tough spot. They have this difficult balancing act between maintaining open access for millions of legitimate users who rely on tools like Colab and Drive and preventing this constant malicious abuse by attackers.
They can't just shut these powerful tools down.
No, but this leaves you with a really important question to kind of mull over as you're navigating the web. As these incredibly effective platform-abusing attacks grow, where should the responsibility for stopping them fall? Should be more on the platform providers who host the content, the security companies trying to detect this fileless code, or ultimately does it all come down to the end user who executes that final compromising command? It's a complex chain of responsibility, especially in a world where convenience so often trumps caution.